sergeant said, here, he handed me a box of 200 rounds of M60 machine gun ammo and a belt of 200 rounds of M60 machine guns. He said, these are yours. And then he handed me a mortar. And he said, you'll carry these everywhere you go. And my journey began.
I screamed at him to surrender. And instead of surrendering, he started to pull his gun towards me, which was instant death for him.
You know, you come back and you just don't feel the same. It's almost like I just miss it. I don't know, I haven't figured out how to put it to the side and just be a normal civilian.
So don't tell me who's wrong and right when liberty starts slipping away.
Get in the tunnels, get them.
And if you ain't gonna fight,
never see the enemy.
Get out of the way.
We need body count.
Cause freedom makes so free when you breathe red and white and blue.
It's like a mind thing, it plays tricks on you.
Giving on myself, cause that's what I do.
Who's the enemy? They had to be killed.
Hello, Boston. I have been gone, but I am back. I've been on the road for Liberty. This is Dan Fishman. You're listening to the Liberty on the Air show. WRKO AM 680, the talk of Boston. If you want to call in, the number is 617-266-6868. Send us a text message at 680-680. Don't bother tweeting us because we're not checking. But you want to get in touch with us, there's a whole bunch of different ways. And we got a live stream going on Facebook as well. So, hey, live stream guys. So, I've been on the road. I was out for 2 weeks. I want to thank Ken Van Tassel for holding down the fort. Studio didn't burn down.
It was close, but we...
It was close. I see like there's a little charred thing over on the side, but I mean, that's to be expected. Yeah, well, good.
Yeah, Will,
I appreciate it.
Will pretty much kept the ship running.
Well, it's nice to have a professional in the audience, professional in the booth who kept us on track. The show's still been going. The last place I went last weekend, 2 weekends ago, I was out for a personal matter. I think the guys mentioned on the air it was my birthday. But last week I was down in New York for a Students for Liberty event. It was fantastic. Bill Weld was there, John Stossel, a lot of pretty prominent Liberty figures. The day after, though, Sunday, I went to the matinee of Hamilton, and it was amazing. I know that we have talked about Hamilton is so incredibly hyped as it is, but you got to go see it, and I'm not going to spoil it. Chances are you know the story pretty well.
But spoiler alert, don't tell us what happens.
Well, all right, so Hamilton dies in the end.
What? But,
can you dump that, Will?
Yeah, so, please.
Please don't,
I'm halfway through the Bible. Don't tell me how that ends.
Scott's got an opinion on this.
Yeah, I set that one up for him.
Okay. But really, I wanted to say the interesting thing about it is that they talk a lot about the military service of Alexander Hamilton. And at one point in time, he was the highest ranking officer in the United States Army. And these were the first American veterans. And this is Veterans Day. So I want to thank veterans for their service. And I want to do that in the context of an article that was in the New York Times today, where many veterans said they don't want to be thanked for their service. And in fact, that they find it when somebody thanks them for their service to be sort of trite. People say it in the same way that they now say, you know, oh, our thoughts and prayers are with you, which really means I'm not even thinking, I'm just regurgitating a statement.
I can back that up. I have a couple of friends who I know very well that are service members. One was a naval guy. One was served several tours over in Iraq and Afghanistan and many different capacities. And whenever I would, you know, I would say something to him, and he knows me very well, and, you know, and to be very honest, he's kind of like, you know, You don't have to do this. And it was kind of like – and it was along the lines of you're saying. So actually it was funny because I hadn't actually talked to him in a while. So I texted him today and I was like, hey, this text is for no reason whatsoever except I haven't talked to you in a while and we should grab a drink.
Right.
And he agreed.
Well, and so it's interesting. We had an interesting talk. There's a head of the local VFW in Beverly at one point in time gave a talk I went to where he said, you know, we don't want to be thanked for our service, but if you want to take us out for a drink, if you want to invite us over for dinner, something like that, that's a really meaningful thing that you can do. And I think that it talks about, you know, our
abstraction. Also, I should you know, I don't mean to interrupt Dan, but like
– Well, you do.
They don't – well, yeah, I'm interrupting. But, well, I'm going to be light, but I respect our servicemen. They've done something that I did not do. They chose to do it. You may not – you may have – if you're a service member, you may, you know, have other feelings. But thank you for it. Like, you know, I mean, I know some people are flippant about it, but I do want to be honest in the fact that I am appreciative of that, that you
so
chose to do something that I
but so one of the interesting things about that is that a lot of guys talk about this.
Banks.
You know, we haven't had the draft in since, I think, 73. And
although I did register for it.
Yeah, I registered for Selective Service, too. Ken, did you have to, or is it done by the time you were?
It still exists today.
Still exists today. All right.
You must
answer the question, though. Did you register for the draft? Right.
There is a legal requirement for all males 18 and older to all register for Selective Service.
So we have to register, but it's not a draft. So everybody who serves that we know signed up. But, you know, why did they sign up? There's a myriad of different reasons. You know, some people signed up because they were looking for some structure in their lives. Some people signed up because they weren't going to go to college and they wanted to do something. They thought there was training there. Some people signed up because, you know, they actively felt like they were going to serve humanity. They were going to do a good thing. They wanted to defend their country. I think, you know, in American Sniper, they talk about the fact that the guy's name is losing Chris, whatever his name is, the American Sniper guy, talked about the fact that he always had an overwhelming desire to protect people, and that was why he joined the service. So people have got a variety of different reasons. But the one thing that I think all veterans will agree upon, and Adam Kokesh talks about this a great deal, nobody's military service is exactly what they expect it to be. You end up doing all sorts of things that you wouldn't do. And one of the interesting points as well is that most people, most servicemen and women never see combat. You know, they do there's a quote in the same article in the New York Times where the guy said 95% of the jobs in the military are like 95% of the jobs in civilian life. You're given an assignment for which you're probably overqualified. You're expected to do it exactly the way that they lay it out for you. You're expected to show no initiative, no attempt to improve it, but to do it exactly in the Army way, as they said in the article. And for those people, when you thank them for their service, what they're looking back upon is, you know, years of drudgery. Now, there are a lot of guys and a lot of men and women who put their lives on the line. Okay, and they do it they don't just put their lives on the line. They put their lives on hold because they're taking time out of their life to serve.
That's a good way of putting it.
And so for those people who serve, I am thankful. And I think that if I say I want to thank you for your service, that really doesn't do a good job of talking about how sincerely grateful I am. But for a lot of the men and women who, you know, it wasn't really – service, it was a job. It's an interesting question. I think that there's a dichotomy between the way that people, veterans who actually served, who saw combat, and people who served and, you know, did a lot of KP or whatever, feel about the differences in the way that they're addressed.
I think that's an interesting point. I really thought about that. But I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that just because you serve in a different capacity, be it, you know, in a forward area or a back area that where you're, you know, sort of support. That is no less service. Those jobs are just as important as being on the front lines. You may not be putting your on the line by being the IT guy back in, you know, Oklahoma somewhere who's supporting the
If you're a drone pilot today, right? It's a very different thing than being a fighter pilot in you know, Vietnam. You know, when John McCain was shot down, was a prisoner for 5 years. That's a pretty intense thing. But we also have
our president likes people that didn't get caught.
Yeah, it's true. Trump does not like the fact that John McCain was a prisoner of war.
I'm pretty sure John McCain also doesn't like the fact.
Exactly right.
And not that I mean, it's no. not trying to. I mean, I'm just.
No, you're right.
Not to be flippant, but
no,
to
not
be flippant.
Flippant at all. I mean, I'm.
Yeah, I'm sure he would rather that he wasn't as well. We also have a different scenario when we talk about veterans today and veterans in the past. So in World War II, when you talked about people going to war, there's all sorts of commentary about how when war was declared, every young person went and signed up. And you hear stories about people lying about their age so that they could get into the military, right? People as young as 16 signing up so that they could serve their country. That certainly didn't happen in Vietnam. They were not 16-year-olds lying about their age so they could go, you know, fight in the jungles of Vietnam. I don't think that it's happening now with Afghanistan or Iraq. I actually do think that you can sign up if you're 17 and you have like a parent signature and you've graduated high school. But
I don't know.
There's a different feeling about what it means to serve right now, what it means to be involved in the armed forces. And that transition has to do with the transition of what we're using the military for. When we are talking about, you know, World War II, we're talking about responding to a direct attack, right? The United States had been attacked, a day that will live in infamy, Pearl Harbor. People line up for that kind of stuff. That brought us all together. When you talk about these wars that we're fighting now, when the veterans come home, you know, they've seen the worst of what we can do. Right. You thought napalm was bad. You see what we can do now with these, you know, enormous bombs that we're dropping, cameras on guns with laser sights that shoot automatically anything that moves from 2 miles away. It is the most inhumane war that we've been fighting. And so the human element.
Isn't that
veterans.
Every war, though? I mean, just to be
Well, I mean, we escalate and we escalate and we abstract.
Do you think in 100 years or 200 years we'll have wars that are more humane?
I know. Well,
it'll just be like, have you seen Robot Wars?
Right.
It'll be our robots fighting Korea's war robots.
Right. Well, I mean, you can make an argument that that's what we're trying to do right now is to restrict robot technology.
A war of words. I don't know.
But when we talk about where we're going in terms of, you know, you're right. I don't know that war is going to get any more humane. I hope that we become more humane in our ability to resolve our differences without killing each other. So we got Skippy on the line. Skippy's calling in from South Boston. Skippy, I'm going to come to you in just a second. And then we got Scott afterwards. I just want to make sure that people are dialing in. It's our Veterans Day show. And so say what you want. We want to talk about the veterans issues. And when we come back, we're going to talk back and forth about some of these issues and how our perception of the military has changed over the years. How the perception of veterans has changed. You know, there's a point when veterans came home from Vietnam and it was terrible for them, right? They were accused of all sorts of atrocities. Mm-hmm. Then there's a point when veterans started coming home and it was a completely different world for them. You know, now you can find all these videos online of veterans coming home, surprising their children. And the one that sticks with me the most is there's a soldier who comes home, surprises his daughter, and she's 9 years old in the classroom. He comes in. And she sees him, and she starts crying, and she runs up to him, and she grabs him, and she's crying, and she says to him, "Daddy, you didn't die." And you think about the significance of that, and what we're doing, what it means to be a veteran nowadays, and you got to wonder, what are we trying to do with our military?
So with Dan, we got Justin O'Donnell on the Facebook live stream. He says the youngest soldier killed in the Vietnam War was a 15-year-old who actually lied about his age to go fight in the war.
I think there were some younger people who died in that war as soldiers. They were probably just Vietnamese.
Right. That's an outstanding point, actually. The Viet Cong, the Viet Minh absolutely were recruiting children. All right, we got.
I don't know if they were drafted. I don't. You know, that's a
recruiting is a loose term.
I don't want to just fly by that. I mean, if you know, there's an American soldier who's 15 who lied who went to Vietnam. I think that's an important bit that most people sort of forget or gloss over the idea that, you know, they think that everyone was so young that, they were just drafted into this war. They wouldn't want to be there. And that
there were a ton of volunteers. So my uncle, actually, college graduate, he didn't have to go. He volunteered, signed up for the Marines because he felt it was unfair that only the people who couldn't avoid the draft would go. Got a Purple Heart, walks with one leg 3 inches shorter than the other now. We got Skippy on the line from South Boston. Skippy, what do you got for us? Welcome to the show again.
Hello, Dan and company. Listen, I got some skin in the game here because on the 15th of February, 1968, my brother, who was 18 and a half years old, PFC James J. Stewart, United States Marine Corps, was killed in Way City during the Tet Offensive. Mm. And I'm going to tell you a story behind this story. You were talking about the motivation of people going in.
Yeah.
His wasn't to bring democracy or voting or any of that kind of stuff. A neighbor of ours, Paulie Bartel, came home with both legs blown off, and it really pissed my brother off, and he made that his kind of quest. So I respect it. I love our veterans. So this is not bad talk about them.
Right.
My bad talk is about those who procure war. Those who procure lies. And the biggest lie that propelled the Vietnam War was the Gulf of Tonkin by Lyndon Baines Johnson. And that made, okay, now everybody says, oh, that happened, when it didn't happen. You see what I mean? And what was it done? It's a business venture. All wars are business ventures, and people don't realize it. They make us, and it's good to have patriotism, but don't be blindly patriot. You have to ask questions. And so, therefore, it still goes on all the way from the Civil War to now. It keeps going on, and it's going to go on. And people have to, you know, when I was a kid, oh, look at those crazy
you're right. I mean,
protesters. Look at those peace protesters. They're crazy. They weren't crazy. They were right.
Yeah, they were absolutely right. And, you know, this is the same sort of thing that Eisenhower warned us about in the military-industrial complex. We got Jeff on the line. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening.
So, Jeff, I believe that you actually are a veteran, correct?
I am actually a veteran. I actually just got out last year. I served 8.5 years in the United States Navy.
How do you feel about people saying thank you for your service?
You know, I usually say thank you for thanking me. I think when people say thank you for your service, you know, I really appreciate that people acknowledge like what you have done, even if they may not understand, you know, what you've been through. And I think it's an acknowledgement of the fact that they could never know. But, you know, that is what it is.
It's a nice way of putting it, Jeff. I think it is just to some people. I mean, it is sort of just, I don't know what you went through. So thank you for that. And it's just sort of acknowledging that. So it's a nice way of putting it. Thank you.
Sorry, what?
I said that's a nice way of putting it. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Many people may not understand, and that's their way of expressing it.
Well, and so, you know, when we talk about things we understand, and I would like to get your opinion on this, Jeff, too. You know, there's this statistic out there that's looming over everybody's head right now. Roughly 22 vets are committing suicide every day now. And when we were talking about this earlier, Mac brought up a good point. I don't know that 22 out of the population of the military is higher than the number of people who are committing suicide in the general population. But I'm going to assume that that's an aberrant statistic, that the suicide rate among veterans is significantly higher because people are talking about that. And I wonder, Jeff, you know, now that you're a veteran, you're hanging out in veteran communities, is that something that vets talk about amongst themselves?
Absolutely. It's the number one thing that people talk about. When you talk about military veterans and the suicide rate, military veterans are 1% of the American population. So when we talk about 22 a day, 22 military veterans a day, the percentage in the military population, that's very high.
Okay.
And even the population of military veterans versus civilians suicide, the military veterans still make up like an alarming amount of suicides, and it's unacceptable. It's absolutely something that we talk about in the veteran community.
I have a question. Do you know? And I believe I agree. It is unacceptable, and it's something we need to figure out. Do you know if this number has gone up in the last 10 years, 20 years, 50 years? Like, were these – I mean, you may not know, but I'm curious if these numbers were the same.
I honestly 22 is like the nice round number that everyone uses. I can't say what it has changed over time.
And maybe it has. Maybe it's been a consistent number, and I'm not trying to say actually, if it's lower that it's great or whatever.
If you want, I got some data in front of me. Between 2000 and 2010.
Data, that's fine. I think one thing is for sure is that it's absolutely not getting better.
Yeah, I mean, between 2000 and 2010, for women, never served versus served, it was a 600% increase from people who have served and who haven't in the suicide rate.
Wow.
And for men, it's 50%. So overall, men commit more suicides.
Increase.
But for women, it's dramatically higher for veterans.
600% increase for women.
Yeah.
Those are some astonishing numbers. All right.
We should do whatever we can to prevent that. And I don't know. I mean.
Well, so I'm going to start off. I'm going to give a quick plug. People can think about this over the break. And maybe if you got to access the web, mission22.com. They are a site that is dedicated to finding ways to reduce those numbers. Jeff, if you can stay on the line, we want to finish this conversation when we come back. So I want to give a shout out to Brad, who mentioned on the Facebook live stream that after 9/11, there was certainly a wave of patriotism and a lot of people signed up. And I certainly know, it's my personal experience. I tried to join the FBI. I was too old for military service at the time. But
you weren't an accountant?
I thought that I could work in the cyber warfare, cyber crimes.
I understand most of the FBI is full of accountants.
Dan thought he could work in cyber crime until he realized that it wasn't to commit cyber crime. It was actually to try to prevent it.
All right. So, Jeff, thank you very much for staying on the line. I wonder if we could ask you, you said you signed up, you just got out after an 8-year stint. What motivated you to sign up?
Honestly, the reason why I joined the military, I mean, it was always plan A for me. Mm-hmm. I went to college first and, I didn't do well there.
Yeah.
And then eventually I went back to my parents and this was 2007, 2008, the recession, the bank crisis and, student loans and financial aid and stuff like that was not really available to me. So I said to my parents, like, hey, it's time to go back to plan A. I had always wanted to join the military. I was always patriotic, and that's always what I wanted to do.
Gotcha. And then what made you leave?
What made me leave? I joined the military because I believe in the Constitution. I believe in freedom and democracy, and I believe in fighting for those things. And, you know, it's the bureaucracy that you get caught up in the military where, you know, in terms of promotion and those things, I really think it's too arbitrary. Like, we're really holding ourselves back.
Right.
It's too arbitrary. If you think about, like, the Revolutionary War, like, we were doing guerrilla warfare. We were doing whatever was necessary to win. And nowadays, it's sort of like, well, we can't do what's necessary to win because the book is written this way. And for me personally, I literally got told, like, hey, you're the best we got, but, you know, you showed up, and there are some people that have gotten here before you. So they're going to get the better evaluation, and they're going to get the pass, and they're going to get promoted before you. So you have to wait in line.
So, Jeff, you were...
No, that's not right. That's not acceptable. I'm not going to accept that, and I'm not going to be part of that system.
Jeff, you were in when Ron Paul was running for president both in 2008 and 2012. And I remember there being big talk about how a lot of the mainstream Republicans didn't like him for his foreign policy stance, but there was a lot out there that said military folks he actually polled very well with. Did you have any sense of him and his foreign policy when you were actually in the military, and were people talking about him?
Honestly, in 2008, first getting into the military at 20 years old, I was not very politically as active as I am maybe today. I knew who Ron Paul was, and I knew he was the guy. I knew he was the one that was saying the right thing. He represented the people, but I also knew that he was the one that had no chance of winning. And we sort of just accepted it. I think you guys know how I feel when I say that, you know, we all knew that this is the guy that was saying the right things and everybody was listening, but he's like, he's not in first place.
Right.
He's not the presumptive nominee, so nobody's going to get behind him because he's not the presumptive nominee.
Sure.
And if you don't get behind the presumptive nominee, then you know, you're part of the problem, right?
Right. And that definitely, I mean, that's sort of one of the things it's considering. And so I want to thank you very much for your call, Jeff. You know, this is a recurring theme where there is always a candidate who talks about a real solution. For example, when Gary Johnson was running for office, he was asked what his veterans policy was, and he said to not make any more of them. That seems like a really good idea. Now, obviously, it's a little facile in that you know, we're always going to have, I believe, some iteration of armed forces.
Yeah, that sounds like there'd be no armed forces at all, which sounds like not a good idea.
Yeah.
If his idea is to not have veterans of a war and then, you know, not having wars, I mean
– Right. And I think that's
naive but laudable.
That's essentially what his I think his basic point was, is that the idea is that the military keeps growing and growing and growing. And there's this also from a Johnson campaign commercial where he said, "We've been kept in a state of perpetual war and unending debt as an excuse for governmental policies that continue to restrict our liberties. Because we have to have these taxes, because we have to have this debt. We have to have these wars because our freedom is threatened, which causes us to build up more debt, which we have to pay off, and it becomes a spiral." And so the idea, certainly that Gary Johnson was putting forward and Ron Paul before that, was that we can have a much more contained foreign policy. We can have Gary Johnson used to say that we want to have a insurmountable defense. We should have the best defense department that we can have, but we shouldn't have much of an offensive war. And that's an interesting concept too, because there are times that you can make an argument that some people would say the best defense is a good offense. You know, was it worthwhile for us to get involved in a military action in Korea, for example? South Korea is now one of our strongest allies. These are sort of the debates that we need to have. And I would argue that if you want to serve your veterans, if you want to thank your veterans, have conversations like this. Have political conversations, get involved, vote, and you'll do a much better job in terms of actually thanking them for their service. So we have Scott on the line. Scott, thanks for calling in.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Fishman and gentlemen. We want to thank all the veterans out there who have fought and died for America. I'd like to say a few comments. Number one, we need to get out of the Middle East. We can't get out of the Middle East. It's impossible because of America's extremely close ties to Israel and the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Number two, veterans are treated like garbage in this country, very poorly. As you said, 22 commit suicide every single day. And, you know, in America, we're a throwaway society. When you're done with toothpaste, the toilet paper, or what have you, an old car, you junk it, you get rid of it. The same with veterans. They end up blinded, amputees, injured, paralyzed, and they spend the rest of their lives in VA homes, veterans administration's homes, nursing homes.
I see where you're going on this. About.
And one last comment I'd like to make is that America, one time, my dad was a veteran. He died 3 months ago. I had a conversation with him before he died. Uh-huh. America was worth fighting for. People came together. There was a patriotism in the land. Today, America is absolutely not worth fighting for and dying for. People are just interested in the Kardashians and who wins the Super Bowl and a selfishness in the land. And if I had a son, I'd never have him fight for this country. It's not worth it.
Scott, that is a wonderful call. Thank you very much.
You.
I appreciate you staying on topic. And. You know, I think you raised.
And
some
sorry
good
to hear
points.
About your dad, Scott.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, especially.
And thank him.
Yeah, the story that you got about your dad, that's a very meaningful one, and I am appreciative that there are people who really did serve the country and feel that way about it. We got Victor on the line calling in from 978. Hey, Victor.
Hey, how are you? Good to hear you this evening. Happy Veterans Day. Actually, almost good morning. You know, I think that a lot. You were talking about the debt in the cost of war and whatever.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting. I was reading an article today. 40% of the Massachusetts budget goes to medical care. So when you say that it's the cost of you know, the military that has created this $20 trillion in debt, I think that's it's less than accurate. It's nowhere near. I mean, the waste and mismanagement from these fossil senators that have been, quote, serving us forever, they don't take any courageous stances. There are PFCs in the Marine Corps that take more courageous stances than these, quote, political leaders.
I agree with that. I think that, you know, when you're when you join the Marine Corps, you take an oath that you actually honor, as opposed to most of the elected officials who...
I'm a combat Marine, and I served in Vietnam as a helicopter crew chief. And, you know, I love our president, President Trump. I admire him. But I got to tell you, it made me a little angry to see him on Veterans Day. It just happened to be the way it was scheduled, and he was over in communist Vietnam. It's more than annoying.
Yeah.
One of the things that you and I have to, and your listeners have to keep in consideration is this. If we do not maintain our allies in this world, then communist China will become the reserve currency, the backer of the reserve currency.
Yeah.
And if that ever happens, anyone with any, Wall Street understanding of finance, that's the end of America, because we are only floating on an ocean of debt. That's the only way America functions anymore.
You know, there's a very interesting comment to that, Victor, and some people would say that we actually are engaged in a conflict with China, but that it's an economic conflict. And
absolutely.
There's a very interesting theory that Bush and Cheney, and this Democrats love this because they love the Cheney as the evil mastermind policy, but they said that what they did is they actually invited a tremendous amount of investment from China, and then they crashed the economy so that we end up paying the Chinese back in 2008 pennies on the dollars that they gave us, in return for which, you know, what was the real consequence of the crash in the United States?
Right.
You know, we really didn't have an enormous, you know, we had a couple days of worrying about our 401ks or stuff like that, but really, the United States didn't get hurt, but for China...
No, I got hurt. When Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, I got hurt substantially. When all these corporations went bankrupt, I got hurt. But the bigger picture, and a great point that you just brought up, I want to ask you this. Why do we allow 300,000 communist Chinese students to come flood into America? We're educating the communists to take your jobs, take your kids' jobs, and the professors earn these fat salaries.
I think the answer to that, Victor, is they're paying the full tuition.
Right.
They're not being subsidized by anybody. They're paying a full tuition, so the schools are very happy for that.
Who benefits from that? It's not the military.
Big education.
Yeah, big education. These professors who sit in their ivory towers and look down their noses at people like me, who medevac people that had their legs blown off, their faces blown off. And they lecture me on how great the left and how great communism and socialism is.
So, Victor, were you drafted? Did you sign up?
No, you don't get drafted in the Marines. You join the Marines.
Interesting. So, my uncle was a Marine, and he also joined and voluntarily. So, what made you decide to sign up?
Well, you know, you're not that bright when you're 17 years old. I joined the Marines when I was 17. I was in Vietnam flying medevacs at 18 years old.
Wow.
And so I grew up pretty quick, but I learned a lot from, there's a tremendous discipline that you get. When you go through Parris Island, you know, they're crying about these people that, you know, the gunnery sergeant picked on. Let me tell you something. They punched and kicked and choked all of us in Parris Island. There was nothing new. And they tried to break you down. And they wanted you to realize, by the way, that pain isn't going to kill you. Pain comes and pain goes. But you have to confront the possibility of pain. And that's what they tried to teach us in Parris Island and in the Marine Corps, that, you know, you got to toughen up, buttercup. You know, it's a tough world out there.
That's a good way to put it. So are you still flying at all? I wonder.
I fly an ultralight.
Wow.
You know, ultralight aircraft.
Outstanding. So, you know, Victor, I'm really glad that you called in. I think that you helped educate us today and you helped educate our listeners. And please call back. We're on every Saturday night at 11 o'clock, and We got shows. We got shows where we think we can benefit from having your commentary.
Happy Veterans Day.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys. So that was, you know, it's a very interesting thing to hear people talk about the fact that, you know, so there were people who signed up for Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, we'd mentioned that before. I think a lot of people
love
got drafted.
I love the way you put that. You don't get drafted into the Marines.
Right. Well, it's an outstanding point. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that draft is only for, or I'm guessing draft is only for the Army now that he says it that way. But I didn't realize that.
Well, I think the Marine Corps is a...
Right. It's an elite. It's the elite branch of the Navy, right? It's the armed forces. So my uncle, who was in the Marines, his sons also both served. One of them was a tank commander. And this guy was – he's like, if you're going to be a Marine, you're going to be 110% Marine. And so we were – at one point in time, we were down in New Orleans together. And he met a guy who was a private. And he said, well, I just want you to know that I'm a captain in the Marine Corps. And he said, okay. He said, okay, sir. And I said to him, I'm like, really? We're in a bar in New Orleans. He's like, I am 110% Marine all the time. And so absolutely an elite thing. And what's really interesting about it, so my uncle, who, you know, like I said, he went to Vietnam, got shot up pretty good. Hardcore liberal. No way around it. I can't hide it. We disagree on a lot
that
of things.
That has to be a small, very small subset of Marines that are hardcore liberals.
It's interesting because it sort of ties in with the reason that he went in the first place. So he signed up specifically because he didn't think that only poor people should be getting drafted. So even though he had a college degree, he signed up. He went to OCS. They sent him to Vietnam.
Which is admirable.
Yeah. Amazing.
Just think it's a small subset of, people who sign up in Marines.
So it's an even smaller subset because – so he comes back, uses the GI Bill to go get his law degree, works works in the PD's office. And then he works in the DA's office. Then he ends up working for the ACLU for years. Now he's teaching history in Central Texas, and he's teaching, you know, his iteration of history, which at various points in time he will say, you know, this is the way I saw it. And that'll make some people in Central Texas mad because he's originally, you know, sort of New York liberal philosophy. But then he'll get confronted by people. And they'll come up and they'll talk to him and they want to complain about things. And then they see the limp and they see the disabled veteran license plate.
Right.
And
well, actually, I mean, you're talking about people that gave up, you know, to not be – to say that, you know, we don't need only the poorest Americans should be serving. We need people of all different classes. And I was actually watching the NFL Network and, of course, the documentary on Pat Tillman came up.
Right.
And I hadn't realized that he had given up, you know, a $3.6 million a year contract.
Right. To go back
with,
and
with
serve.
The Cardinals to right. join the Army.
And that, as far as I'm concerned, is the definition of service.
This in from the text line from the 617 in response to Victor's call. In my experience, Chinese foreign students I've worked with have been the least of our problems. My own experience is that these students have been hands down the most capitalistic of any this person's worked with. And he says it's the urban white kids who feel guilty about existing. Those are the ones that fall for socialism.
That's an outstanding point. So we got Brandon on the line. Brandon, thanks for calling Liberty on the Air.
Hey, Dan. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. What do you got for us?
Well, you see, I think that what lies at the very core of the American experience is what can we export? Now, we can export bombs. We can export force, which is less than preferable, I think, on many people's opinions and morals. We can export freedom.
Yeah.
And how do we do that? And we do that through the mechanism of free market. What can you be? You can decide that.
I think some would argue that the way we export bombs, we're trying to export freedom.
But it's not. Go ahead.
To some extent.
It's a great miscarriage. And there is a difference between forward projection, which is the protection of the trade routes and the alliances that we forge with countries that are still struggling with the idea that people should be free to interact with the market. Right. On their terms, to choose and not to choose. And there are obviously the difference between the exploitation of countries that can't really make decisions on their own. And I think that there is a fine balance to be strike there.
Right.
And in that regard, having people come into this country and experience our educational system and our economics allows them to go back to their countries of origin and forge that valuable lesson in their own countries.
I agree with that. That's an outstanding point, Brandon. And in fact, there's a very interesting corollary to that, that if that is our goal, right? If the goal of our armed forces is defense, but the goal of the United States is liberty of the world, the way that we fight that the most is not just by being a city on the hill, not just by being a torch for liberty, but by exporting capitalism.
Or how about even being an example at home first? Well, maybe we could try to be a little bit more free here to set the example elsewhere.
We could be, but I would argue that if you want to start a small business, this is still probably the best place to do it.
Right, but let's do a better job at it.
We can.
Let's get better.
No question about that. And I think that getting better is something that is another way that you can thank a veteran for their service. Because I'll tell you what, you want to know what a veteran really wants when he comes home? A job. A lot of veterans are dealing with unemployment right now. So one of the ways you can thank a veteran for their service is to hire them. One of the ways you can thank a veteran for their service is to create a robust economy. One of the ways you can thank a veteran, instead of saying thank you, is to exercise those rights that they fought for, that they served for. Emphasize the freedom. Emphasize the liberty. Take advantage of what we have created, what we have used our armed forces to defend. Now, I would say you can make an argument about Iraq being a bad war. And I think most people would say that it was. You can make an argument that Afghanistan, there's at least a justification because an attack came out of Afghanistan on our country. Yeah, we're about to, I hope not. But we might be engaged in a conflict in North Korea. In fact, I believe that the president tweeted today a complaint about Kim Jong-un. And when he did, it makes me wonder about, are we going to go to war in Korea again?
Yeah, I mean, you might call this a complaint. I mean, a few hours ago, Trump tweeted, why would Kim Jong-un insult me by calling me, quote, old, when I would never call him, quote, short and fat? Oh, well, I try hard to be his friend, and maybe someday that'll happen.
Well, I don't know that the president's job...
So cute.
Yeah, that his what he's doing in terms of diplomacy is...
Now with 280 characters.
Now with 280 characters, making the world a safer place. What I do know is that on this Veterans Day, we've had a real conversation about veterans affairs. Okay, we've talked about the fact that we know that there's a lot of stuff that... We do. We owe a debt to our veterans. We know that there are people who have served. And we know that a trite thank you for your service doesn't cover it.
So happy Veterans Day.
And find a way to go out there and do something that uses the liberty and the freedom that your veterans have provided for you.
Good night, Skippy. Thanks for calling back.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad, and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad, and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more, and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host Dan Fishman every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on the Voice of Boston, AM 680 WRKO.